Con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un McChicken es solo $1.50. Resulta que ser el héroe de tu primita solo te cuesta $1.50. Por un McChicken, good deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Hello and welcome to another episode of This Thing On. My name's Alex Petrovich. I'm here with my co-host Joe Foster.
Hi.
Producer Al.
Hello.
And our fantastic guest this month, Tez Ilias.
Hello.
How are you?
Hey. Yeah, I'm really good, man. Thank you for having me on.
No, thank you for coming along. Well, I was trying to remember how we actually met. It's been a while. I think we met on like the London open mic circuit, most
probably,
likely.
It's where I meet everyone.
One of those nights where there was like 37 acts on the bill.
Yeah, so I'm honoured that you remembered me. Those nights dragged.
I've kept in touch with all 37.
Oh, nice. You're a better person than I am.
Yeah. Yeah, though, I was thinking about this the other day. Like, every time I used to do one of those gigs, I was always like, why am I, this is... how this isn't even comedy sometimes, but I think you do have to kind of go through those kind of tough early gigs where you're the 37th act on the bill, the audience is asleep, and most of them have left.
If there was any audience to begin with.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't know anything about comedy before I started doing it. I didn't even know there was an open mic circuit, so I didn't know anything else. Mm. And living in London, it made it quite... having a massive open mic circuit just on my doorstep made it quite convenient for me because I could gig and get better.
Yeah.
Every night for like 3 years.
Yeah.
And so without it, I don't think I'd be where I am.
Because you're originally from Lancashire, aren't you? When did you move down to London?
So I moved down to London at the end of 2009.
Okay.
Beginning of 2010. And that's around about the time where I was kind of looking for a hobby in the evening.
Yeah.
And stumbled across a stand-up workshop. Which went quite well, and then found from that, made a couple of contacts and found the open mic circuit.
Nice.
So yeah, it was never like an ambition, or kind of something that I thought even was in the realm of a possibility. Yeah.
So it was only once you'd moved to London that you started?
Yeah, if you said to me, oh, you could become a stand-up comedian, you might as well have said you could become an astronaut. That's how far it would have been as a possibility to me.
Nice.
Because my university didn't have, and a lot of universities have kind of like an amateur comedy scene. My university had nothing.
And there's so many comedy courses now at the moment as well. Like, there's quite a few in London. There's a big one down here in Brighton as well. But
there's comedy degrees in Southampton.
Yeah.
Right, so this is all stuff that I found out afterwards.
Yeah.
Like, I'd never been to watch, I think I'd been to watch live comedy twice before I started stand-up.
Well, yeah.
I wasn't a connoisseur by any means.
There's a lot of universities that have comedy in them, but because there's not going to be that many people that are like, yeah, stand-up is the only part of comedy I want to do. I think it's probably a bit sort of washed together with like sketch and like things like that. So yeah, I suppose, but what's weird about the comedy in general is that there is just this whole world that you just, you know, like you said, there's no way of knowing that it even exists unless you spend lots of strange nights.
Yeah.
Terrible people.
The open mic night is such an entire subculture in London that I had no idea existed. Mm. And then you become part of it and you're like, this is weird, but fun.
Yeah.
And then you kind of eventually graduate out of it.
Yeah. It is kind of just like the kind of school of knocks kind of you've got to do those gigs to kind of progress through it.
Plus London's one of those places where you've got where they're quite strict about their 5 minutes, and it takes a long time to get past 5 minutes, but if you do get 5 minutes you can do it all the time, you can do two or three because the nights go on for so long it doesn't really matter, does it? You can just go from one tube stock to the next one to the next one, which is good. It also encourages people, I think, to have smaller, better material because you only get 5 minutes for so long. If you want to try some new stuff, it's going to take like about a minute of your time.
Yeah, and I think also it's quite inspiring being in the open mic circuit when you see either new people or people who've been making me good for a couple of years who are really, really good. And you see these people and you see what they like and stuff. And that's really inspiring, I think.
Well, I think you see so much variety as well. Mm. And like, obviously, it's seeing all these different people, it kind of inspires you, like you said, to be kind of get better. And like, mm. I I need to up my game. Yeah, yeah. I still feel like that.
Even now, like I hosted Comedy Virgins in the Comedy Shams in Stockwell every Tuesday for nearly 18 months. Mm. And I only left because I left London in December. And yeah, you just get such wacky and wonderful people. Yeah. But there's still some really, really good people that come through. And even now and again, I'll see a set and I'm like, fucking good. Fucking good. Like,
how many gigs have you done? Two. Right.
When I haven't seen someone and they impress me, I asked them how long you've been, like we got by the surgeon, asked them how long. And sometimes it's just someone that hadn't come across and they're going 2 years. And I'm like, oh, okay, fair enough, you're good.
Yeah.
And other people are like, I've been going six weeks. And you're like, fucking good.
What's happened to me now is my answer to that question is so depressing that I try and avoid it for the other reason, because it's been so long. Like, no time at all. Or cut down years. I have cut down years if I've died really badly. Oh, really? Which is absolutely pathetic. Although, to be honest with you, the amount of gig is a lot more than I did at that time. So those first 3 years or something, I used to think I did a lot, but I really didn't do that much.
It's weird as well. I never really know whether to, because I took so many breaks from comedy. When someone asks me how long I've been going, technically, if you go from start to finish, I've been going like 7-8 years, which is insane. Whereas like I took like 2-4 years off at a time, like, so I never know whether to go, funny, been going a week
cumulatively 7 weeks, but in length I've been going 7 years next month, so I kind of, as soon as I started, I kind of hit it quite hard. I found the open mic circuit, I think, because I found the 5 minutes that worked for me quite quickly, and so that served me well in the competitions, and the competitions validated me in my head going, oh, this is okay, you can do this. And then after the first year.
So you did really well in competitions. You got quite a lot of finals.
Yeah, the first year I got to like four, I think, four decent ones. And then after that, I was like, well, I think, I mean, like, I was in it.
That's
awesome.
I know this isn't really.
that's really great, man. I'm pleased.
Competition's treated me so well.
That's the thing. Everyone does that, staring into the middle distance with competition. I've not done too badly with competitions, but they do make you. Oh, they make you hate everything.
I remember going to them and, like, you know, there's comics that you know are good, but you're just watching them in the comics and you think, oh, you got that much for that? Oh.
Yeah.
Hack audience. There's like hack shit in this audience, don't they? But you know, like, but in another gig, you'd be like, oh, that's really good stuff.
Yeah.
Makes you an awful person.
Because I think there's a level of tension in a competition room. But then again, you know, I just suck at competitions a lot of the time.
I don't think I could do them now.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult.
That's the thing as well. It's like you've got to have that really tight five, and like once you're used to doing longer, to try and turn that into like and like sometimes when I see like those kind of compilation stand-up shows and they've just condensed everyone's set down into like 2 to 3 minutes, like, how are you deciding what is your best 3 minutes?
That one that's like 3 minutes, that's intense.
It's like an Edinburgh one, isn't it?
I think Amuse Moose is now like really short.
Oh, really?
Which is another.
But they always had a 90-second audition.
That
was fucking hilarious. Sorry
to that. So basically, that's like,
because that was no audience. It was just comics in the room, and you're doing 90 seconds of material, and you're like, everyone has seen everyone in this room.
Yeah.
It was just weird. It's a weird circumstance, but that's Amuse Moose.
You've done a lot of TV as well, haven't you?
Not a lot. I've done some.
Some.
I've done Virtually Famous, Safe Word.
Live from the BBC?
Yes. And Chris Ramsey's thing on Comedy Central.
Okay, yep. How was that?
That was probably the most fun one that I've done. Because
that show looks really fun.
Yeah, it's just, you're just messing about. You're just messing about with a couple of mates for like a couple of hours. And Chris is really good. And he's also really
He's always been really nice when I've met him.
Yeah.
Seems like a nice guy.
He compared my heat for the BBC New Comedy World first in Newcastle. That's how I met him. And he was just really, really... He had no reason to be nice to me. He never met me before, but I remember him being really nice and giving me a couple of words of advice before.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I've always had a lot of time.
No. How do you, like, if you are doing TV stuff like that, how do you decide your set for it? Or is it just tailored to the audience of that show?
They have to check it as well.
Yeah, so live from the BBC, it was a bit of a weird one because it happened literally less than 24 hours after the ISIS attacks in the Bataclan.
Oh, wow.
So literally the next afternoon is when... So that happened overnight.
Oh, fuck.
And I had to record at 3 p.m.
Yeah.
No, I think it might have, like, 5 p.m. But anyway, it was less than 24 hours. And I was so worried because I was like, not everyone understands comedy necessarily. So I've got jokes about terrorism and stuff.
Mm.
They might think I've written this overnight.
Mm, yeah.
I think, what an insensitive prick.
Yeah.
I was so worried about it because it was a gig I was really looking forward to. It was a huge deal. And then suddenly I got in this panic. I started dieting all my material.
Too
much? Is this too much? Is this too much? So what we ended up doing was a false start. So I got called on so the warm-up guy was also doing the introducing because they didn't have a compere on the show. So the warm-up guy introduced us. And so I came on and basically the false start. So I just came out without the mic and just went, listen, guys, we all saw what happened last night. It was awful. I just want you to know that anything I've written today
is
pre-written.
Yeah.
None of it is
off the cuff.
I've written anything new since off the back of last night.
Yeah.
It's obviously really unfortunate what happened, but just please try and enjoy what I'm doing on the merit of this. And then I went back off and then went back on and it was fucking awesome.
Nice.
That's great. Really good. Because, you know, if you hadn't... It's impossible to say, though, isn't it, with stand-up? If you hadn't have done that, would they? But maybe a couple of people would have, but you don't know.
I don't know.
You don't know, yeah.
And when it's being recorded, it's not worth the risk of them.
If it was a normal gig, it wouldn't have mattered. I needed that to be a good... It's to showcase my material on TV and stuff. It needs to be awesome.
Because I've been in TV audiences, like tapings for TV shows, like chat shows and stuff, when they've had what some people would deem a controversial guest. Mm. And then they've got their audience heckling, just seeing... It's quite interesting seeing like a TV taping being interrupted so much, that compared to what they then cut it down to on the final show, and obviously it's so seamless, and it's like that it never ever happened.
You've got to tell us who that was.
Yeah, what happened?
You can't leave it there.
It was the Frank Skinner show, his chat show, and the guest was George Galloway.
Oh, right, okay.
And it was, I think the guests were taking, I think it was something to do with Palestine and Israel, his stance on that, and they were kicking off.
Oh, yeah, a lot of passionate.
Yeah. It was an intense one. It's interesting to see how they do kind of cut it down and chop it all up after that.
I remember that Nick Helm wrote that article, didn't he? He wrote that article about how he wasn't happy with his performance, the Live at the Apollo thing.
Mm. Well, I heard on the day, people had come, because I knew some people who went and came back and was like, oh my God, you wouldn't believe who died at Live at the Apollo. And apparently he died.
Really? Fuck.
And he'll admit it. I'm not saying anything he hasn't said. And I'm a big fan of Nick, but it just happens. He was on so what people don't realize about Live at the Apollo is they record two shows back to back.
Yeah. Mm.
So he's the sixth comic and everyone's doing 25 minutes.
Oh, really? That's fucking...
And they have
a break
in the middle. So he's on at like 10 and they've been there since 7.
Yeah.
And he's not mainstream.
No.
Sort of act. So you kind of have to buy into it. And by that time, people are quite tired.
That's a long show.
Yeah, and it's also a very mainstream kind of audience. It's not an alternative audience. So I think that mixing all of that together didn't help. But they cut it and it looked fine.
Oh, really?
It did, didn't it?
Yeah, it looked fine.
I've never seen it.
Because I was really intrigued to watch it and it looked fine. Like, if I hadn't known that, I'd have just gone, oh, he hasn't smashed this, but he's done fine.
And in all fairness to the producers of that television programme, bang. I've actually been to quite a few of Nick's shows with you.
Yeah.
That were all really, really good. So if you're putting a bill together and you're going, right, who's going to go number six? Everyone's going to be flagging who's going to inject some energy back into the room. It would be him.
And you wouldn't want to follow him.
No.
No.
I've seen,
fuck no,
at the time, more famous comedians try to follow it, and they've literally gone on stage and openly said, I don't know what to do now. How do you follow that? And that's like him in his white wide front singing to someone in a crowd, and then they're like, how do you...
I don't want to follow that shit.
Do you know tin openers?
Yeah, you can't.
I'll tell you one thing, I wish they'd been able to edit my Chortle student clip like that. Because that is 5 minutes of silence on the internet. I cannot get taken down.
Oh, what?
It was like my...
Where?
It was the London... It was like a London heat. But the thing is, the camera zoomed in on me, so you can't tell that there's only five people in the audience.
Right.
And
right,
then it's literally...
Which makes a huge difference if you're listening at home.
And then I was really worried about looking at that. Like, I knew it was shit. I knew I died as well.
Alex, three's a crowd.
I doubled up in Brighton like a couple of weeks ago. I did two gigs, and it was a combined total audience of seven. So Ted, since you've last seen me, I've been doing pretty well.
Wow. Well, you know, it is what it is.
But like, it's like looking at that clip. It's like it is. I can't get it taken down. It's literal silence, and I was really scared to look at that clip. And like a few, because I knew how bad it was. And then about 2 years ago, I finally convinced myself to look on it. And there's just one comment on it, and it just says shit.
Sorry, we're finding that hilarious.
So that's going on my posters.
I got into a spat with Tommy Robinson online, and he said, "You're a shit comedian who's only getting a shot because of diversity quarters." Wow. So that's now on my poster for this year.
Oh, really?
So I'm like, great.
But he is a bit of a... I've heard he's a bit of a wanker, that guy.
Yeah.
just a little bit.
But that was like perfect. That's on my poster now.
He's...
I love stuff.
How did that even happen?
He was having an argument with someone that I follow.
He's the EDL one.
Yeah,
the for people. Now he's something else bad.
Yeah.
What is he now?
But that German group who are like the EDL, whose name I've forgotten off the top of my head. Not the Nazis, apparently, but like the Nazis. They're not called the Nazis. Diet Nazis, I think they're called. Yeah.
Nazi light.
He got into a spat with someone, and I think the argument was about something like, oh, look how many favourites you've got on your tweet compared to how many favourites I've got on my tweet, or something, or retweets or something. And I was like, oh, and then I just replied saying, oh, it's not that, we just don't want to give any oxygen or publicity. So that's all I said. I wasn't rude to him, I wasn't mean to him, I didn't swear at him or anything, and then he just... like quoted the tweet and wrote that, and I was like, perfect. And then all his goons piled in, and so the whole day I just going, poof, poof, poof.
Yeah. Was this on Twitter?
Yeah. I tend not to get involved in stuff, but sometimes, like, I didn't know, because he's got like 100,000 followers, so I didn't even think he'd see it.
Yeah.
And then he blew it up, and I was like, fine, this is cool.
That's fucking awful. I mean, that's the thing, is it do you argue? Because whenever I argue with anyone on the internet, there's always people around me going, hey, you're out at the pub, can you just leave it alone? You're not gonna... I don't think any internet argument has ended in someone going, do you know what, I never really thought about it that way. but like, also, if you've got that, then that's all you need to get, isn't
yeah
it?
You've
got the quote, and it's now going to sell, sell, make money.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, man.
I think it's time for our first feature of today. It's time for Plots That About.
Plots, that's a plot, 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 that's a about.
Right, it's a new feature that we have at the moment where I give yourself a film name and Joe a film name, and completely different films. And these are real films, they're not good films.
Okay.
They're vague titles, and you've got to tell me what you guys think the film's about, and feel free to embellish like what actors and stuff you think are in there and what the film could be. And then at the end, producer Al will decide which film he'd like to see the most?
And I'm not gonna, so if I know the film.
Oh yeah, yeah. If you know,
I probably won't. But.
Yeah, you should explain, Alex. The idea is you won't know. This
yeah,
film.
You shouldn't
These
know
are
the
completely
film.
Like yeah.
Low
budget TV.
Yeah.
Fine, fine.
Tez, yours is The Shining.
Oh, take it
away. Jim Carrey caper.
Jim Carrey and The Shining. Fucking insane.
So yeah, and then I'll reveal what the films are actually about at the end.
Cool.
I will have Joe go first, yeah?
Yeah, Joe goes first.
Please. Always. Jim Carrey and The Shining, I'm fucking going first. Like, whatever he's going to say.
Okay. Joe, your film, and I really hope you haven't seen this one, G-Force.
G-Force.
I think I know what that is.
Do you actually?
I think so.
But do you know this version? G-Force. For God's sake. It's about a family.
Okay.
Whose dad is a member of an extreme political party.
Okay.
Nice. So they move to a new town and no one accepts them. All the villagers and the mayor, who is played by Stephen Hawking, says, you guys made it weird. Stephen Hawking's just doing some acting. I don't know why anyone finds, you know, he's a great man.
Okay.
So he's the mayor and he says he doesn't want them to be there anymore. He comes to their house with all his guys from the thing, but the thing is that it's like that film, you know, the ones with the prawns. That's based loosely. It's set in South Africa.
Oh yeah, no,
District
yeah.
9. So it's kind of like that. So at the beginning, it's like, you know, you go, oh yeah, this is just a guy doing his job. But then the family, they're just, you know, normal, and then you find out secretly it's bad.
Okay.
So then okay. you don't know so you don't know it's bad yet. But then they move to this new town and these people are judging the books by its cover and they're saying that I reckon it's bad without even knowing because everyone already knows. They think. But then it turns out that the only reason that this political group, which the dad of the family is a part of, which I forgot to say,
okay,
is considered bad. So more information comes out about what they're doing, which is like...
I feel like you haven't seen the film.
So they're doing... So basically they play on the fact that people love animals here. This film would not be for release in Europe. Because the reason that the group is bad is because they hurt animals. But actually they find out at the end that they're actually saving animals. And
So it's like a twist.
Yes, it is like a twist. But when they are hurting them, they go to animal factories. And like, you know, where they, what are they called? Puppy farms. There you go. They go to puppy farms and they're murdering those puppies. But then it turns out that those puppies had like a bad disease that was going to kill him in a really horrible way.
Okay. Right.
And the people that go there are called the G-Force.
Yeah, just to get the name of the film in there.
Just to get the name of the film in there.
So like, who plays the dad?
Just like last week, who plays the dad?
I know Stephen Hawking's the mayor.
Liam Neeson.
Liam Neeson, obviously.
I'd really Harrison in my head. But yeah, Liam Neeson's strong.
Okay.
It's
That's so not a very
Woody
light-hearted
Woody
film.
Harrelson plays the son, so you're right.
That massive age gap between father and son.
So you were correct about that. But yeah, that's it. G-Force.
Definitely not a rom-com.
No.
Is there a...
It's more of a Schindler's List for
us. Yeah,
it's a Schindler's List.
It's District 9.
Yeah.
And puppy farming.
But can I say what I think the film is?
Yeah.
Is it about hamsters? who are like part of an army.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. I mean, it's better, isn't it?
It's just... The animals were right.
Yeah. They're always, I learned from the last podcast actually, they are always better than mine.
So, yeah, it's basically G-Force is about this this kind of inventor who wants to take over the world with like technology, and the only people that can stop him are this highly skilled secret agents that just also happen to be guinea pigs.
Guinea pigs.
Wow. Is it
it's a Disney film
or live action?
I think it's live action. Obviously, wow. Obviously CGI guinea pigs.
That's why it's called G-Force, not H-Force, because it's guinea pigs, not hamsters.
Yeah. And it's also, stars Zach Galifianakis.
Really?
As the guinea pig trainers.
How did you hear about this then, Des?
I think it's just one of those. I think I've seen a trailer for it in the cinema.
Have been trying to keep these films out of the cinema. It's cheating.
What if
Tez had got that film?
I think one of the films I was looking at was a straight to DVD film, but
yeah, I think that sounds a lot better than mine. So Zach Galifianakis, and then is there anyone else of note?
Nah, Zach Galifianakis. Oh no, I think Bill Nye's in it. I think, I've completely forgotten. Yeah, Bill Nye's plays the inventor, I think.
My scientist.
Yeah, that's trying to take over the world.
I can see him flourishing in that role. This film sounds quite good.
I hope he got handsomely compensated for that.
Yeah.
And you're loving your live-action animal movies right now, aren't you, Alex?
Yeah.
Last episode we had Air Bud.
Yeah.
The story of a dog that plays basketball.
Yep.
Yep.
And then we had Pompoko, which was about raccoons that have magic powers generated from their testicles. And
this is a theme. And then the one theme. You've been doing this secretly and we just worked it out.
Joe's ones are normally about animals, but I'm gonna have to mix it up now. That was Believer, which was about
a
racehorse.
Can you give me two actual words that exist? Because the last three have been like air salt.
It's not supposed to make this easy for you. You're supposed to be difficult.
I think Tez is going now. I think he's going to do a lot better.
Ready.
Wait, Tez's one might be difficult. Tez, your film, and I really hope you haven't seen this
Man
one.
Fire.
Wind chores. Chairman of the Board. Have you seen this film?
No.
Okay.
Chairman of the Board, producer Ryle, you should really check out. It's a really, really controversial documentary voiced by Samuel L. Jackson about how the chairman of the board of the NBA is secretly a white supremacist, which is really ironic given the success of black people in the NBA. And it kind of uncovers how basically he's trying to get black kids into sport so that black kids who are not good at sport have something to aspire to, but they're never really going to get there. And that takes them away from education. And so they don't become productive members of like the wider workforce and just aspire to be sports stars. Same in the music industry as well, actually.
Oh, what, the same guy's got
hip-hop and R&B? It's the same sort of Illuminati kind of...
Okay, so it's like a ring.
So there's a board above the board.
Wow. Call them a ring, it makes them sound worse.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's a ring above the board where the chairman of the NBA board sits on with the chairman of the music board and the president and the governor of Texas, and they all sit together and they plot this really big conspiracy to try to stop people of color, particularly black people, flourishing in things that would actually make a difference. So Obama was like the one anomaly. He's kind of like, he was like the Neo of America. He somehow managed to get through.
Is this a documentary?
Yeah, it's a documentary.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a documentary, yeah.
Because it is based on
it's
true
all,
events.
So it's all true.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's all narrated by Samuel L. Jackson.
Mm,
Okay. How does this like wind up then? Where do we get to by the end of the documentary?
I mean, spoiler alert, everyone.
So I don't want to spoil it, but basically what happens is they find Samuel L. Jackson voicing this film. And they just grab him and take him away.
Replace him with Liam Neeson.
He clicks send before they click. Like, click send and then the film's uploaded. That's how it finishes.
Wow.
It's like, get your motherfucking hands off me.
Then, roll credits.
Yeah, and then that's the end of the film.
This is enlightening.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm
gonna find this on Netflix.
That is infinitely better than what the actual film's about. The real film is, and let me just double check my notes. Chairman of the board, Carrot Top, plays a young surfer.
It couldn't have been further away.
Wow. His genre is what I was saying. I got the genre right, I think.
Yeah, is that a documentary, Alex?
A documentary about Carrot Top's early upbringings. Yeah. But he's appointed chairman of a billionaire's invention company following the billionaire's death, and a comedy ensues as the billionaire's estranged nephew conspires to bring down the company. Apparently, the film was only written so it was an excuse for Carrot Top to just play with some props for about an hour and a
Who's
half.
Carrot Top?
He's an American stand-up.
He's been performing in Las Vegas for about the last 30 years.
Yeah. Okay.
But he's basically loads of prop
the comedy. Prop comic, isn't it? Yeah.
Who's our equivalent?
Maybe Harry Hill. Maybe.
Loosely. Harry Hill, I think's better. Cool more highly Harry regarded.
Hill. Yeah.
But not as cool as Harry Hill. Like, he's Carrot Top is not cool.
No, okay. Not a cool comic.
Okay.
But he does use props, but yeah.
Yeah, and he's had a lot of plastic surgery.
Oh, he looks really fucked. Old. And I think loads
kind of looks like Mick Hucknall. I sort of looking at photo.
Yeah, and it kind of big. I think he's been hit in the bag, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Quite some time.
Beefed up, isn't he?
Oh, no, I meant cocaine.
Oh, yeah. I thought you meant he's like a boxing.
He's been punching those bags.
Yeah, less street people always make that mistake. Yeah, there was actually a joke in the end of the film, the Hangover, where they run into Carrot Top and he gives them loads of gear at the end.
I remember that bit.
Yeah, I do remember that bit. But yeah, I actually know quite a lot about Carrot Top because he was performing in the hotel I stayed in Las Vegas.
Oh.
You did your research?
No, I did, by accident. So was Chris Angel, who's like David Blaine, but shit. Anyway, Carrot
Top. What film do you want to watch, mate?
Okay, here we go. I'm going to add in a little drum roll, I think.
Okay, yeah, we need some like heartbeat, kind of tense
maybe,
music.
Yeah, building, yeah.
Boom, 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 boom.
Well.
Boom, 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 boom.
I mean, Joe did manage to bring it back. As I always tend to like, the way you bring it back round to the title of the film. I like that a lot. But, if Tez's one had been real, that would have been the most hard-hitting documentary the Earth has ever actually seen. So it's real.
Yeah,
if that was real, then that is... Then it's got to be Tez's goal in this episode.
If what happened in that actually happened in real life,
yeah,
it would bring down governments, yeah, I'm sure. We wouldn't be able to live in a world where that happened.
So for that reason, yes, Tez has won this round.
Congratulations, Tez.
Really good film. Do go out and watch it. It's a really good film.
We're just in the street because it's happening all around us.
Documentary and real life. I know this isn't necessarily a particular, this might be a sensitive subject at the moment, but what's happening
say?
To Blackburn at the moment?
Oh, mate. So, background, Blackburn Rovers have been relegated from the Championship into League One, which is a third tier of English football. Just been a spectacular mess since the Venkies took over. They promised a lot, didn't really understand football, haven't really backed us in the way that they should have, made really bad managerial appointments. Obviously, when we got relegated from the Premiership, had to sell off a lot of players. Then every single year, operating costs apparently are quite high, so they've had to sell off more and more good players, which has eventually led to us being relegated. And now, but my fear is that we haven't hit rock bottom.
You think it's going further?
That's what my fear is. I don't know where it ends.
This isn't what I was thinking in football. Is there nothing that can be done to?
I don't think unless
an owner wants to keep hold of a club.
Yeah,
then...
nothing. They're not doing anything illegal.
They're just
ethically awful, but nothing illegal. The FA can't force them to do anything unless they change their rules. I don't know what those rules would have to be for them to take action against them. Unless someone just come in and bid for it. But it's not... Blackburn Rovers is not an attractive business.
Mm.
Even if we were doing well, we should be like 10th in the Premiership.
Yeah.
We still wouldn't be making money.
Mm. Mm. It's crazy that some of the people that end up... just if they've got that money, they can just buy a team like that and just... essentially just have it as a toy and there's been recently there's been some crazy chairman
and then sometimes it works out, like Leicester City, you know, kind of it worked out for them in a spectacular way. Well, we'll see what happens in the long run, but it seems to be working out for them really well. Well, I mean, when the Premiership won't, you know, it's never going to happen again probably.
There's Vincent Tan at Cardiff.
Yeah, that's going okay.
It's sort of calmed down now, but there was a period where he was going into the dressing room and telling players that he was getting angry if they weren't shooting from the halfway line.
Oh, really? That's kind of mad, I guess.
That's when
didn't he change their kit from red to blue?
Yeah. Oh, was it the other way around? They...
was it? Yeah, it might be blue to red, actually.
Yeah, it was one of them.
It was one of them, yeah. Like, how that's big. That's,
you can't do that. Joe's not a massive football fan, so... Yeah,
I mean, this is all very confusing.
So basically... like kit colours in football can't be changed. That's like a big no-no.
Thanks, Alex. I'm 27. But I mean, yeah, that's the thing. If you wear a different coloured shirt, everyone goes mad. That's the rules of football. People get very petty about things that don't really matter. Anyway, carry on, guys.
Brighton got promoted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Producer Al, you're a Brighton fan, aren't you?
Times.
Yeah, big style, yeah.
Are you looking forward to the Premiership?
Lots of pitch invasioning and all
that.
When
was the last time you guys won the top tier?
34 years ago. Wow. I think 36 maybe. 36 or 34. A lot.
So this is the first time in your lifetime?
Yeah. Yeah, big style. Yeah. Well, I say that I'm 36.
So. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, but you're around there. Yeah.
And he's from Sheffield.
Yeah. I'm also rooting for Sheffield Wednesday. Well, that's something
I think everyone in Brighton secretly rooting for Chelsea. Yeah. Right.
Blue and White Army, that's me. Either it be Brighton or Sheffield Wednesday.
There's also Blackburn Rovers, Blue and White Army.
Well, oh, God, yeah.
And Sheffield Wednesday. Damn, Sheffield Wednesday, you Brighton support
Sheffield
three teams. You just like blue and white teams.
Yeah. So it's good season.
It's hard to know how it's going to... Because everyone's always... Brighton been on the cusp for quite a while now. But now that they've done it, like, the parade down here was crazy. How much did they think? It was like... Did they think 60,000?
They said 100,000 people.
Wow.
But... it was not 100,000. Some people said 60, some people said 30.
I heard 60. It looked busy.
How many people live in Brighton? Like, what's the demographic?
I think it's 250,000, 300,000.
Right, okay.
It's not huge then.
No, it's not massive. Yeah. Although I may be basing that figure from when I heard it 10 years ago. Grows, that's probably
as everyone
changed.
Moved down from London.
Yeah. Mm. Well, that's the in Brighton at the weekend, apparently the population just quadruples. It goes from 250,000 to like a million.
Wow.
You are just throwing out numbers. Yeah. Like
a million. I hope all of these make the edit.
I will be held accountable for everything I've said today.
I only come to Brighton for comedy. First time I came to Brighton was for a friend's wedding. And then, and subsequently, just when I have gigs.
Do you think, because that's some, like, a lot of comedians that come down, they do say that Brighton crowds are different. When you're gigging down here, can you sense a difference? Or is it
not really
comedy?
I think so. I find Brighton crowds honest.
Mm.
So, previous years, when I brought my work in progress shows, I've brought what I consider to be the draft.
Mm.
Like, I think this is the show, guys. And then I bring you to Brighton Fringe for 3 nights. And then they say, no. This is not, do not take this. And I'm like, oh, thank you. Thank you for your honesty. I'll go and do some work on this. And I always found that really, really useful. So they're not, they don't just laugh at any, like, I think people may have this thing in their head that Brighton just laughs at anything. No, they're good crowds, yeah. But they're smart crowds.
They'll let you know if they don't like something.
Yeah, like, yeah. No.
And I tell you what they love knowing Brighton crowds. If something works in London, but it hasn't worked at that particular gig, they love knowing that. If the joke that you say always works in London, but then you tell it in Brighton and it doesn't work, please be sure to tell the audience that it usually works in London because everyone likes that. That's just a great thing to do. Not even here, just all over the country, just wherever you are.
I do think they like that in the north.
Yeah.
Fuck off back then.
Yeah. I've seen so many people, usually works in London. And you're just like, everyone wants to, now, before you were just a bit bad, now everyone wants to murder you.
I've seen some interesting tactics at some gigs I've done recently. Seen a comedian, they're going to remain unnamed, but openly telling an audience to their face that the reason they're not laughing is it's their own fault.
Cool.
So it's an interesting tactic.
Good way to build goodwill in other rooms, isn't it? But yeah. No, I'm really looking forward to Brighton being in the Premier League besides all the pubs being ruined every Saturday for the rest of my life.
How is that different to them being in the Championship?
Because one really...
They play less games, technically.
Technically, they do, but more terrible people support the teams in the Premier League to fill up more space, I think.
The Premier League teams probably do travel bigger.
Yeah.
But...
and it's all space. I'm talking about exclusively
and Liverpool and Chelsea.
Exactly. And there's people down here. We're all fans of those teams until we've gone up. Now and now they're not, apparently. I was looking, going through the parade. I'm not going to go on about this for too long because it infuriates me. I was looking through the parade and it was all my friends who were being tagged. And I was scrolling down my newsfeed going, yep, Chelsea fan. Liverpool fan. Loved Man United since he was two. now they're all there. So I'm having a great time.
I feel like I made a very poor choice growing up. Like, I decided to be a left wing liberal and a Blackburn Rovers fan. And in the long term, that has not worked out. That has not worked for me at all. Like, I wish I was like a glory
underdog story
Chelsea fan who supported the Conservatives. Like, in the long term, that would have been a spectacular place to be.
Yeah, imagine if you were those people. Everything's going your way.
It must be so good to be a Chelsea fan and support the Conservatives.
A small-minded racist.
That must be the best.
And they're not happy. They're not. They just keep going.
Driving a 4x4 in the city. You'd
be the best. Fuck the congestion charge.
You'd be the best. I would love that.
They won the EU. They won America. They won
everything. They won the Premiership this year.
Someone was talking about... someone was slagging off John Terry at work because there's been all those news stories about how much of a terrible person he is. And someone was like, yeah, he's a great footballer, though. And I mean, in all fairness, they're right. He is great at that. As long as he doesn't...
That's his job.
Yeah, that is his job.
A lot better at his job than anyone you know at their job.
Yeah.
I find that's like this excuse of footballers on football pitches, whatever happens, whatever they do, there seems to excuse them from everything else. But the other thing is, I was looking, there's been a few bad tackles in Fulham games recently. And I hate this whole thing of just because it happens on a football pitch, it doesn't seem to get treated with the same level of. A lot of these tackles and assault, well, sometimes there are like elbows and stuff. They seem to be confined to that football space, and some of them are assaults. They should be punished as.
Yeah. I don't know. but it's in the game, though, isn't it? Like it happens in rugby, like
true.
Ice hockey.
Yeah,
but boxing is literally the sport, isn't it? I mean,
yeah. Boxing is literally beating someone up.
Yeah.
You kind of consent to it, don't you? If you're a person consenting to it, then I guess it's different.
But are they consenting?
That's what they should have done.
Maybe not consenting to an elbow in the face.
Yeah.
But I think it's also difficult to prove that it's deliberate.
Yeah. And that's the thing as well. Like, again, there was a red card in a Fulham game recently where the player got sent off for what was an elbow, and his argument was, I'm walking back and the guy's face has gone into my elbow.
Like, if you jump, you jump like that.
Yeah.
No one jumps like this. Especially in football, where you kind of...
It's such a grey area as well, because there are some where you look at it and go, you know exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, but you couldn't prove it, though.
And such a grey area like that, I suppose it does.
And so many times, like some dives are so clear cut. But again, you can't prove that they dived deliberately.
No,
because if they say I didn't, you cannot prove that they did.
Well, there was that one in that Manchester United game where it's not a dive, but Tyrone Mings got banned. So Ibrahimovic got sent off for an elbow, and he got three games. Tyrone Mings got sent off for a stamp on Ibrahimovic. But I watched that, and it didn't look like he was looking at the player. It looked like that's just the way he landed.
Then
someone's had to make that call and go, that you've made a conscious decision to stamp on that person, and just such a grey area.
But you think they should all be locked up? John Terry, in all fairness, would be in prison where he belongs.
Yeah,
if that was the case. No, I'm joking. No, I'm not joking. You are going to get sued. That's a good point. They walk onto the pitch.
If
so
allegedly he did all the things.
Yeah. Sorry, allegedly. Everything is alleged.
Just have a disclaimer at the beginning of this, but everything we say is allegedly.
If allegedly he scored all those goals he's been that I've been credited with, then he'd be a good footballer, yeah.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Though. Exactly.
Allegedly. Right, let's do the second podcast. Do you want to introduce...
Second podcast? You mean second feature?
Second feature. Well, we can cut that whole thing out now, because you're going to introduce... Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'll
do it. I didn't cut anyone off mid-flow, did I?
No,
that's cool. All right. Yeah, feature time. No. Cool.
We are ready for our second feature, which is the film years. Is that actually the name now?
This one doesn't have a jingle.
Yeah, it doesn't have a jingle because I don't think it's staying for long.
Yeah. But, just leave there, guys. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. There you go.
Done.
I'll find sorted. Something.
It'll get put in.
Cool.
Nice. Can you do it like a sort of share effect? Oh, please.
A share effect?
You know, like when she did that, do you believe?
Oh,
like an auto-tune.
Yeah, like an auto-tune on that.
All right.
Right. Joe, do you want to explain this
one? Yes, I will. I'm going to give a film. You have to say what year it was released in the United States of America. Basically, it's actually really not that difficult. But the person... So you're both competing anyway.
Right.
But the person who's guessed... If you're guessing second and that someone's given a guess, if they're in the right area, it's more than likely that it's above or below that year. So, no guessing the same years. That's pretty much
okay,
it.
Okay, fine.
And we'll take it in turns to go first.
But what if I know it was that year? If I'm like, shit, I know it's 1995.
Well, then you are powerless, my friend.
fine.
But fine. Yeah, so if the example was Logan, the answer would be 2017 because it came out this year. Okay. Right. Film number one is The Dark Knight Rises. Who would like to go first?
I'll let you go first.
Yeah.
2011.
You're going 11, Alex?
I'm trying to think what I was doing that year.
Yeah, that's a good way. Sorry, that's a good way of working out when it was. You work out what you were doing in your life. It's supposed to be...
The Dark Knight Rises the third one?
The Dark Knight Rises is the second one? The Dark Knight... Yeah, The Dark Knight Rises is the second one, isn't it?
It's the third one, isn't it?
I'm sure it's the second one, isn't it? Because the first one's The Dark Knight. The second one's The Dark Knight. Oh, no, maybe it is the third one.
What's the third one, then?
Because
the first one is Batman Begins.
The first one is
the second one is Dark Knight,
and then Dark Knight Rises. So you're right, it's the third.
So the third one, I think.
Okay. So you're on 2011. I mean, I didn't really
I was in between 2 years, but I've gone 11.
I think
2012 is correct.
Oh.
Alex.
I'm really shit at this game normally.
I knew it was around that period.
Yeah, that's the thing. You were so close. And that is that he used that rule. If you go one above, you'll get it. Film number two is Mrs. Doubtfire.
Ooh.
Yeah. Alex first now.
1970.
Yeah, just, no one's actually done that before. Just pretend they're doing the working zone. 77.
So 70. So
Rocky was 76.
Carry the one.
I think Jaws was early 80. I think it's 96.
You think it's 96?
Okay.
Tez?
I'm going with 1990.
It's 1993.
Oh! Wow, it's that early.
93 was the first thing in my head.
1993.
Is that the initial? But when you were 96, I went, oh, maybe it's not 93.
My shit guessing's thrown you off.
Yeah, 96, that's three whole years away, but then.
Oh. Well, in all fairness, I thought it was either around 94, 95, but hey.
It was 94.
Yeah. It's
93. Wow. /94. Like a season.
Hang on.
Season of 93, winter 93.
I'm going to give this a 1-1.
December 93.
Release New Year's Eve.
Yeah, so we're still on.
Film number three is Goodfellas. Which was stop doing that, banging your phone down. Okay, cool. I'm on the sofa.
So just me now.
Yeah. Goodfellas.
Goodfellas is 1990.
Yep. And see, Alex,
I'm so glad Tez went first with that because I literally this is one of those films where I'm not great with films.
Never seen Goodfellas.
Never seen Goodfellas. Never seen Goodfellas.
You're wow. Such a shit guy.
If I'm wrong by a year, I'm going to be so angry.
Well, that's the thing. That now because you've gone first, I can.
Because I have a feeling it could be. Yeah, go on.
No, we're going to go and finish that. You go and finish it.
I feel like it could be 1982. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to reel you in on that one. And I'm going 91 then.
91. The correct answer is 1990.
Yes! Oh.
Yay, one all.
We were on one all.
That one I think I knew.
Yeah, that was really confident actually when you said that.
Yeah,
but then in my head I was like, is it 91 though? Like, in my head I was like, it could be 91 though. But I knew it was around then.
Always go with the gut.
Oh, competition's heating up.
Film number four is Inception. The competition is heating up because it's a good competition besides what I keep telling by everyone, including producer Al.
I'm going 2013.
Now, the question is, did Inception come out before or after Dark Knight Rises?
And also, you know, here's a crazy one. Where were you living? Do you remember it when Inception came out? Work it out for the
I watched it in the Bright Marina.
I think it's definitely before 2012 because Tom Hardy was in Inception and then got cast in Dark Knight Rises. So I am going with 2010.
Alex?
I've already said my answer.
Oh, what's your answer?
2013. Which I'm immediately regretting.
You mean
change it?
Wrong, because it was 2010.
Yes!
Oh, dear.
All right.
I remember watching Inception in the cinema. And you know when, like, it's quite a long film. It's about, what, 3-something hours? And I didn't realise how long it was. And I really needed the talk. I was like, well, it's only got to be, like, 10 minutes left. So I was just trying to hold it the whole time. It was an hour into the film and I tried to last for two more hours.
To be fair though, if you miss any 10 minutes of that film, you're fucked.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you're
fucked.
You can't miss.
You know what? I've never seen that one.
You've never seen Inception?
I've never seen that one either.
It's good.
But it's not.
What is wrong with you guys?
It's a classic, is it?
Fuck Goodfellas. It's all about Inception.
No.
So I didn't really know, but I thought, well, if Batman Dark Knight Rises was 2012... Christopher Nolan made Inception and knew it was beforehand. Two years seems enough time to make a film.
Yeah,
it's good.
That's good logic.
That's good workings.
He's pulled about we're gonna 2-1.
We're
going to
play that as a clip when the next time we do this.
or to explain it to our guests. This is how it's done.
Listen, you fucking Momo. Oh, we better block that out, because I saw that. I'm sure that was in either Goodfellas or Casino, which always means that I'm not sure whether it's a racial slur that I just don't know what it means. Someone says it in Casino, it's Momo.
In what context is it saying?
It was like, oh, shut up, you fucking Momo, or something like that. But I know, now I've just said it, recorded, and now I'm going to be like, what? You think that about Israelis? You're disgusting.
Yeah. Right, you know? Well, you know, we have the power of edit.
Thank you. It's Robert De Niro, though. He wouldn't commit to something terrible. Film number 5 is Brokeback Mountain. I love Martin Scorsese films. Let's talk about it.
Who's first this time?
I am. And I'm going to go with 2006.
2007.
The answer is 2005.
Oh,
you should have played the other way of the rule, mate.
Very close on these. Very close on every single one.
By the way,
I've just looked up Momo on Urban Dictionary. And it's a racial slur for Mormons, so I think we're all right.
You're right.
Oh, that's fine then. Yeah.
that's a weight off your shoulders.
Yeah. Oh, I offended someone.
They're so nice, they won't lie.
Lucky bastards. I am. Right, okay, cool.
They'll probably end up sponsoring us.
Yeah.
You know, like they did on, was it the Book of Mormon program?
They have an advert in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I think they should let them have a free advert in there, personally. given that thing, but yeah.
given the whole show.
Yeah.
The whole premise.
Film number 6 is Sin City.
Again, I'm out of my depth here, and it's my turn to guess first, so I am going to be way off. 2003.
Fuck! That's what I was going to go with.
Is that a good guess?
I was going to go with 2003. In that case, 2004.
It's 2005.
Oh!
Is it still 2-1?
2-1. Yeah.
2-1.
Yeah,
okay.
This is.
I mean, that by one by a lot.
Yeah. I was realizing how much of an asshole I was on number 7 because it's Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is going to be a difficult one.
Is that the original?
No, the Raiders of the Lost Ark is the one.
It's the original.
Or is the original? Yeah, it's the original.
Sorry. I should just stop disagreeing with you on things. You're always right. And I'm always
have you
wrong.
Learnt nothing about having Tez on this podcast? He is normally right.
Yeah, actually, should we just change all of his answers and just say that they were right? You've probably got it wrong, Joe.
Films, I like films. Especially mainstream blockbusters. I'd be getting
excellent.
In this.
Perfect game. Who's there?
You're first on this one now. Oh, no, is it me?
I think it's you.
Yeah, it is me, sorry. Yeah. 1980... One.
So I'm struggling if this is late 70s or early 80s. I think it's early 80s. I think it's... I'm torn between 82 to 84. So by the law of averages, I'm going to go 83.
Okay, 83. Because the answer is 1981.
Oh no.
That was really difficult. I was being a real old.
I think we should just call this feature Tez is Always Right.
Oh, actually, it's quite funny because I was being a real douche on that one. So the next one is Star Wars Episode 1 The Phantom Menace, which, I mean, should be quite
that's
easy
you
for all of you.
First. I know this one, I think.
So Alex has the advantage because he can guess first.
Also, I have the disadvantage of I'm shit at films. think it's around the millennium. So I'm, I think 99?
Right.
Fuck. I think that's right. In which case, I'll go 2000.
It's 1999.
I knew it was 1999. Oh, that one I knew.
Was it 3-2?
Yeah, 3-2. Yeah.
How many got left?
Well, I've got two more if you guys want to play it.
Hey, yeah, might as well.
Let's do it.
Tez can take it with this one.
Okay, so film number 9 is 8 Mile, ironically.
Is this you first?
Mm. I was at university when it was released. That much I do know.
Where'd you go to uni?
Lancaster. So I'm going to say 2004.
Alex?
2005, which I think is wrong.
It's 2002.
Finally,
wow. Yeah, but it was
Okay.
Yeah, well, I was thinking. That.
I mean, fact check that.
Ted is probably right.
Yeah, he probably is.
Yeah, well, I thought he'd only had a couple of albums out by the time he did that, and his first one was 97, so he probably wasn't going to be that.
Late. Yeah, 2002 sounds about right. Fair enough.
Number 10. Who's guessing first?
Thing it's
you
me?
Are.
Yeah. Me.
So you can draw level here, yeah. Alex, to finish.
And then we'll need a tiebreaker.
I'm sure I can find one.
We do have IMDb.
The Hateful Eight.
Okay, I don't know that one. So,
well, I mean, I don't know.
Big chance to steal.
Just gotta guess. I think I know.
Do you think you know? Okay, well. I'm not even sure a decade. I am going 94.
Right, I'm going 2016.
It's 2015.
Oh! It might be the year before.
That was my tactic, throw you off so much.
I thought it was 16.
But that's still a victory.
That is still a victory for Tez. Yeah. 2-0. Congratulations.
Congratulations indeed.
Thank you very much. That was fun.
That was it.
Yeah, weirdly competitive.
Yeah.
Very.
All the guests enjoy it, but we've had some negative feedback on that feature.
Someone said, you're just naming years. I don't need to hear you talk about films because I know when they were all made because I'm arrogant and bald. Anyway.
That is a joke to one
when
person.
When you said the Hateful Eight, then I was so angry. I was fucking last year. That was 2 years ago.
That was a direct. That was a direct comment at one person that fed back to you,
and he will hear it in 2 months, and he should listen.
Just you wait till July, mate.
Fucking mouth.
Tez, have you got anything that you would like to plug?
Yes, I am going back to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival with my third short, Tez-tify.
Love it.
And that starts on the 2nd of August till the 26th of August. So if you're going to Edinburgh, I'm there the entire time. Please come and see me at the Pleasance. And you can follow me on all the usual socials. Just my name, Tez Elias.
Is that Twitter and all that sort of?
Insta and that.
And website?
That's that Twitter.
that Twitter thing.
That's what you've heard so much about.
I've heard the rumours.
Website is tezelias.com and all info will be on there.
Perfect.
And you can join my mailing list on that as well.
Perfect. Do you guys have anything to plug?
No.
Nope.
No. Well, just the usual. Yeah, just the usual. Just email us thisthingonpodcast@gmail.com. Send us any funny stories or anything you want. Any of our guests to be Agony Aunt or Uncle of or anything like that. Or, anything you want us to chat about. Any guests you want to get on, whatever it be.
We're open to suggestions. Right, that's everything from us this month. I've been Alex Petrovic. Thank you to my co-host, Joe Foster.
Yeah, hello.
Thank you, producer Al.
Thanks.
And thank you, Tez Elias.
Cheers for having me.
Thanks, Tez.
Thank you.